Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the third hour of American Journal. We're going to be joined by Eric Orwall. He's the president of Return to the Land. And he'll be joining us momentarily. But lucky for us, NBC did a news report on him and his movement yesterday. NBC News reporting very, very fairly, I'll add, on the creation of this independent community in the Ozarks. Let's watch.
No blacks, no Jews, no gays. High up in the Ozark Hills, in the state of Arkansas, dozens of people have been working hard, building houses and a new type of community. It's called Return to the Land, and it is a town open to white people only. They are millennials and Gen Z, and this is a new update of age-old prejudice.
What we've done here is establish a place where we have control over who our neighbors are, and that is just for the sake of preserving, you know, our culture.
And that culture, effectively, we're saying this is a white culture, a whites-only place.
White American culture.
But what this sounds like is bringing back segregation. Is that a fair assessment?
It's free association. So we're not trying to keep other people down. This is a small settlement in the middle of the Ozarks.
But they are being kept out, even if...
Well, I mean, you don't let everyone into your home.
Around 40 people live here. Hundreds more from across the world have paid to be members. And while the men do the physical labor, the women take care of the children who live here full time.
It can be a very loving community if you're part of the community, but if you're black, or if you're Jewish, or if you're gay, you can't be part of that community.
They can have their own communities, and they already do.
You might be wondering how any of this can be legal. Return to the Land is structured as a private members association, which they believe allows them to discriminate on the basis of ethnicity, along with other factors. That has yet to be tested in the courts and may well fail. The Arkansas Attorney General has said his office is now reviewing the matter as a result of our reporting, and that there is no room for racial discrimination in Arkansas or anywhere in.
All right, so that's a report from NBC. Here is NBC, that same station, reporting on exactly the same idea, only with black people instead. Freedom, Georgia was an initiative to create a black-only town. Here's how NBC reported on that project.
Well, families from across the U.S. are taking to nature to celebrate Juneteenth. 41 NBC's Elizabeth Gutierrez takes us to a campsite in rural Wilkinson County where people are preparing for the weekend festivities.
For Eric Wilson, Juneteenth is a time to come together and celebrate freedom.
Even though we're coming from all over, we're still family. So I'm coming from Detroit. People will come from other parts of the country.
Wilson, like many others, is stepping away from the city to camp out in the area known as Freedom, Georgia in Toombsboro.
This location is so important because this is freedom. This is where we plan to build a community for us, by us.
Laura Cooper is the CEO of the Freedom Georgia Initiative. She bought over 500 acres of land in 2020 with the goal of creating a community for people like her. The campout allows her to give people new experiences.
This is just a celebration of freedom. You know, us as a black culture having an opportunity to celebrate a day that's just for us.
Campout festivities will last for 3 days. Families will be able to participate in workshops, yoga, and watch the live performances. Although it may be Wilson's first time camping in freedom, he's looking to the future.
I really just feel compelled to freedom, want to go ahead and participate. I'd love to come down and maybe one day build a house. So we'll see what happens. You know, I've met a lot of nice people.
Along with having fun, people who attend are learning how to live off the land. In Toombsboro, Elizabeth Gutierrez, 41 NBC News.
A little different tenor, a little bit of a different tone. Same thing, same idea, creating a community for people like yourself. When it's white people, it's hatred. The attorney general's involved. It's about exclusion, keeping people out. Why are you so racist? Why are you so mean? When it's black people do it, it's about freedom and embracing your community and about finding safety and togetherness. And if it's okay for one, it's got to be okay for the other. If it's not good for either, it's not good for either. It's the abject unfairness and hypocrisy of our society on display. We'll be talking to the founder of that white-only community on the other side, talk about his plans for the future.
Dragon attacks from Sky a record of the hearts and minds of the American people, it's the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. My guest is Eric Orwall. He's the president of Return to the Land, a growing movement of like-minded people and activists that recognize traditional views in European ancestry. The website is returntotheland.org, and you can follow him on X at Arvoll, that's A-A-R-V-O-L-L underscore. Eric, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, glad to be with you, Harrison.
Well, tell us about Return to the Land. Tell us about your project. And just start with that, because then we'll talk about the controversy and, you know, why a lot of people are learning about you for the first time, which is that some unfriendly communities discovered you and raised your profile quite a bit. But first, just tell us about Return to the Land, what your plan is with it. Instead of hearing about it from NBC News and all of, you know, their hatred, why don't we hear from the man who's actually doing it? Why are you doing this, and what are you doing exactly?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a relatively modest rural community in northeast Arkansas. We're down a dirt road on about 160 acres. I've always celebrated my European ancestry. I don't think it's good to feel shame about your ancestors. I went to school for classical music. I read classical European philosophy. So I'm very enthusiastic about the tradition that I'm a part of. Other like-minded people, I ended up linking up with them online through my social media, and they came down and helped me with a project that I was doing in Southern Missouri. And then the ball kind of just got rolling. You know, we all thought it would be a good idea to try to do something bigger. It's refreshing to be able to talk with people and not hide your true beliefs, you know, be candid about how you feel about your heritage. And we didn't think there was anything wrong morally or legally with creating a community for ourselves. You know, I don't want to deprive Black people or Jewish people or any other group of their right to do this. And I also don't want to deprive the rights of people to integrate if they choose. You know, I think forced segregation was immoral, but also I think forced integration is immoral. So people should be allowed to have communities on whatever basis, in my opinion. That's what we've done.
Well, and certainly for every other group, it never seems to be an issue. But obviously, that's a inconsistency that we see in basically every aspect of our lives, where racism is completely abhorred and white people are evil, right? And somehow people say this and with no sense of irony, even though it's just obviously insanely hypocritical. So I started this hour in that first 5 minutes showing the report on you, calling you racist, calling this community hateful, et cetera, et cetera. And then basically there's a group of Black people in Georgia want to create a city they called Freedom, Georgia. 97 Black people want to create a Black-only community. And every report there, I just chose the NBC one because I wanted to use the same station, you know, just to emphasize the hypocrisy. But it's about love and togetherness and community, and it's an amazing thing that they're so proud to present. And to me, that's the big issue. Like, I don't even necessarily have like a feeling about, you know, what you're doing. Like, to be honest, I like living in a city. It's not the type of place I would want to go to live, but I think you have an absolute right to do it, especially if everybody else has the right to do it. Did that inform, you know, your plans at all when you saw things like Freedom, Georgia going up? Did that inspire you at all? Or just what's your feeling on the way these two very similar projects are so differently treated by the media?
Right. Yeah. Freedom, Georgia was absolutely our main inspiration. No, we were aware of communities like that, Jewish communities that do exist. Orania in South Africa, yeah, I think, has always been the leading example for European ancestry people looking to do things like this. I actually visited Orania with our vice president back in January. And what they've done is really, really impressive, especially considering the state of the rest of the country. And they're minding their own business, doing their own work. We intentionally copied their own work policy. So everything we've done here, it's been our own labor, except like drilling the wells. We don't have well drilling equipment, of course. But everything that we could do, we did here on our own. So they're several inspirations, but really, it's funny that of all the groups that have attacked us the most, it seems to be Jewish reporters and Jewish Reddit that has been aggressive about it, when Jews, better than anyone else, have created dozens, hundreds of intentional communities around the world. They also have a nation state that is explicitly Jewish. So it seems like a clear double standard. You know, why is it not okay for us to do the same thing?
Yeah, and that you know, includes, you know, neighborhoods inside New York and these sorts of things where, you know, Jews run their own sort of parallel legal system, and they have their own police forces, and all that sort of stuff. Nobody has an issue with that. And then, yeah, I guess this is where your profile really exploded. Or you tell me how it happened, because this has been going, I mean, you've been doing Return to the Land for a few years now, right? This isn't a new thing, but it's coming on a lot of people's radar because of this. I guess a Reddit user found out about it and started making a big deal about it all over Reddit, and that got attention of some mainstream sources. So how long have you been doing this? How long has this been going on, and what happened with this Reddit user, you know, blowing up your spot and bringing a bunch of negative press to you?
Right. We are coming up on 2 years in October. So yeah, we've been here doing our own thing, minding our own business, no real problems with locals. Most people who know what we're doing, we're generally supportive of it, even if they wouldn't choose to do it themselves. This Reddit user on r/Jewish really took issue when he found out what we were doing. I believe he found out about us through my YouTube videos or maybe an X post or something like that. And he basically single-handedly whipped up this harassment campaign. So he started 20 separate threads on different subreddits, calling on people to contact government, media groups, civil rights groups. And, you know, some negative statements have come out from various groups, you know, Latino groups, Muslim groups, things like that. But ironically, in the comments, I've noticed that mostly Latinos, Muslims, Blacks, other groups, they're totally in support of what we're doing. You know, I constantly see comments like, let them segregate. You know, if they want to go do their own thing, they're leaving us alone. So yeah, this guy whipped up this frenzy against us, and some media did pick up the story. We had actually already had Sky News come out. I'm not sure how Tom Cheshire, the reporter there, heard about us, but he contacted me and I said, sure, come down. They were very friendly with us when they visited, and we basically gave them full access. And that was a decision on our part to go ahead and be open about what we're doing, because we're not trying to hide anything. We're not trying to get around the law. We've done our darndest to abide by the Fair Housing Act and all the other discrimination law that people might try to turn against us. And we think it's important that someone does stand up for our right to do this sort of thing.
Well, it just seems like that should be the response. I mean, it's the same response I have when I hear about Freedom Georgia. It's like a bunch of Black people want to go create a town. Good for them. Why would I care? What does that have to do with me? Why is this such a threat? Why is what you're doing with Return to the Land so objectionable to so many people? Again, I understand the anti-white sentiment that prevails in this country. And so people just have a knee-jerk reaction when they hear white only. It's like, evil, that must be evil. But how did we get to that point? And again, I can't understand it, because I try to treat people like I like to be treated, and I can't understand the hypocrisy of, you know, seeing a group of Black people doing it and going, good for them. And you see a bunch of white people doing it and going, this must be stopped. We have to stop this. It's like, what's wrong with y'all? If it's good for them, it's good for them. Leave everybody alone. Just how do you respond to that?
Yeah, I really can't even understand the moral inclination to want to attack a group like us, where we are minding our own business. Like, what exactly is morally wrong with what we're doing? And I think it's a matter of association. You know, people rightly, I think, criticize the forced regime of racial segregation in America's past. They rightly criticize slavery. And because what we're doing involves voluntary segregation, there's that common term, segregation, their knowledge of it is all bad, right? Mm. It's like a bad connotation with that word. And now because we want to do the same thing voluntarily, not forcing anything on anyone else, just being around our own people, and because we're the group that in America's past enforced a kind of legal regime of segregation, it's sort of guilt by association. Now we're not allowed to do it, even though there are Native American reservations. Like, why do you think it's a good thing that we gave Native Americans their own space and they should be allowed to voluntarily segregate if they choose, but then for us, it's totally morally bad? They won't really acknowledge that it's a punishment for like the sins of our ancestors. Some people will go so far as to openly admit that, but they tend to kind of cloak it in this idea that, you know, racism is always bad, but then the definition of racism is always changing. I used to think of racism as judging someone solely on the basis of race. And, you know, when you judge someone, it's for a purpose. So there are some things where race might be relevant. You know, if you are casting for a movie that's set in like medieval England, right, you're probably not going to cast a Nigerian guy. In some cases, actually, you do judge on the basis of race. And especially for communities that want to maintain cultural traditions, you know, cultural traditions evolve in particular groups of people. So we're enthusiastic about our particular tradition. We want to make sure that it survives and also that our people survive. And I think that's a very natural inclination, and no one should have a problem with it.
Well, I agree. And, you know, I can't help but see integration as it's existed for my whole life is sort of a giant lie anyway. We're really not integrated as a society in any meaningful way. Like I went to a really big public school in Houston, sort of an inner city school, and I was half in the regular classes, half in the gifted classes. My gifted classes, there would be one black kid and the rest of the kids were white. In the regular classes, I'd be the only white kid and everybody else is black. So it's like, all right, this school, for all intents and purposes, is still completely segregated. It's just they both have to be managed by the same administration. So, I mean, even the idea of like that they forced integration through busing in the 70s, you go to the public school in America now, it's still segregated. You go to churches, they're still segregated. Neighborhoods are still largely segregated. It's pretty much natural human inclination to want to be around people that, you know, you are similar to genetically, physically, mentally. It just makes sense. And it seems like all of the forced integration hasn't even succeeded in their stated goals in the first place, because schools, for all intents and purposes, are still segregated. They just, you know, have different labels for it. And it just makes the whole administration of the one school with two populations, you know, completely inadequate.
Yeah, right. I mean, it would be more efficient, really, to allow different groups of people to have their own institutions, you know, the gifted classes, ordinary classes, also like history. Some people might care more about African history. They might want to have that emphasized. Some people might care more about the history of East Asia, and that could be emphasized. Allowing people to have their own schools, go their own way. With religious education, most people are generally supportive of that. So I think it is more efficient to allow groups to manage their own affairs in those domains of American life that are the most voluntary. There is the most segregation. People do naturally do this. Right. Churches are the most segregated area in American life. So it's clear that in people's demonstrated preference, they're conscious of some kind of sentiment of in-group loyalty or just preference for their own group. And I really don't get why that's supposed to be a bad thing. When I get more conspiratorial with it, I look at what's going on in Western Europe and I say, this isn't just an accident. It's happening specifically to people of European ancestry. And what it looks like is that they're trying to deprive us of our own habitats. You know, if you wanted to kill off a species, you would eliminate its natural habitat. And, you know, people will say, well, you know, whites aren't going to disappear. But then they write books like On the Nature of Whiteness, where in the future, what's considered white will be more brown. It's like, you are talking about a very gradual process of ethnic cleansing and replacing us. And there's even explicit UN documents, I'm pretty sure, about replacement migration.
Yep.
So I don't think it's accidental. And surely, you know, Return to the Land, part of our motive is to make sure that we have our own habitat for our own people in an explicit way. Because, yeah, by not allowing those explicit white spaces, you're essentially depriving us of our own ability to maintain our own identity.
It makes perfect sense to me. I think it's pretty undeniable at this point that it's absolutely intentional. I mean, it's not even that you have to speculate. They literally give speeches where they say it. I mean, hell, Joe Biden, famous clip of him going, "We're white men are never going to be the minority majority again," and that's a good thing. Like, it's very clearly an attack on white people. Against why I've never felt bad about defending white people. Why would you not defend the people that are under attack? But obviously 60 years of psychological programming has gone into convincing people that that's evil or wrong. I think we need to, you know, get over that. I personally like living in a city. I like a little bit of diversity. Again, I grew up in Houston, so just like the most diverse city, you know, in the country. But I also like going to places with a lot of white people and experiencing that as well. And I don't want those places to go away. And I wonder what has been the effect, because like I said, I was sort of aware of what you were doing, but you didn't have a major public profile. Then I guess it all starts with this. It was the Jewish community on Reddit. It was r/Jewish is where the original post came from. And then, you know, you've got a lot of publicity. There's a story yesterday from The Hill, backlash as whites only group plans Missouri expansion. So you've gotten a lot of attention about this in the recent past. How's that affected your work, your ability to do this? Has it helped? Has it hurt? How are you responding to the increased awareness of your program?
Things have gotten a lot busier, for sure. On the whole, it looks like it has basically helped us. And also, the general public online seems to be mostly on our side. You know, Sky News, they tried to make a hit piece, but if you go in the YouTube comments for their video, everyone's saying what we're saying, like, why is this an issue? Why are you guys mad about this? So I think the public absolutely sees the logic behind whites also being able to have our own spaces. If it's good for blacks, if it's good for Jews, good for Native Americans, why not us? Now we've gotten a lot of financial support as well. So we now have a large legal budget that we are actively using to engage in research on a variety of fronts to make sure that, you know, if we are eventually sued, we'll have already arranged our structure so that we are resilient to whatever's coming on the side of obviously discrimination law, real estate law, securities law, just across the board. So we're trying to cover all our bases, and it's sort of ridiculous that it even is necessary to engage in, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of legal research to even just have a white neighborhood. My ideal scenario would be that Return to the Land is unnecessary and we don't need to form intentional communities like this. We can simply choose to live together and that would be cool with everyone. I think we could get there. I think there is a lot of pushback against the civil rights regime now. You know, there's still PR that people feel positively about the idea of civil rights and equality. But that's not what the Civil Rights Act actually enforces. What it ended up bringing in is this regime of affirmative action and racial quotas, where now we are explicitly legally judging people on the basis of their skin color and their race, where, you know, just allowing everyone to do their own thing. That's what I'm in favor of, which is true equality under the law. You know, if race shouldn't matter, then why do racial quotas matter? You know, you're telling me simultaneously that I shouldn't care about my race, but also it's very important that X percentage of employees in this corporation are black. Like, why, according to the same logic, why does that even matter? And I've come to the conclusion, you know, millions of people have encountered what we're doing. Some people have, a vocal minority have spoken out against us. A lot of people, more people, have voiced support. But out of all those thousands of people who don't like what we're doing, no one has offered to say, you know, debate me on what we're doing. Is it ethical? I'll defend it from first principles. You know, I'm into philosophy. What is the moral ground of their position? Why is it wrong to do things like this? And they can't argue that position, and they won't argue that position. So all they can do is smear us and misrepresent us and try to spook the public about us. But I think we've gone about this in a smart enough way, in a humble enough way. We're just in a rural area in Arkansas. All the judges around here are very conservative. The public around here has no problem with what we're doing, by and large. You know, there are some people who object, naturally. But basically, it's only helped us. So thank you to that one Jewish Reddit user, really.
Well, you know, so far in the short term, you're going to benefit, but obviously there are now gears working behind the scenes. I'm sure there are attorney generals looking into this. I'm sure the ADL has a task force on you now. You're probably headed for some rough waters in the future. Now, I'm sure you're aware of this and you're setting aside a legal fund to deal with it. But I want to talk to you about how you deal with the legal issues. You know, even when you look at something like Orania, I mean, they've been so successful. They've been such a shining example of sort of what you're trying to do. And yet you hear the South African government right now and they're saying, we're going to take it. We're going to go and take Orania. And they're not going to, you know, be able to keep that from us, even though, I mean, they literally had nothing to do with it. They provided nothing. They excluded themselves. They built it all themselves. The, you know, black leaders of South Africa have no right to Orania, but they're going to try to take it. And they're marching to Orania to try to take it. So, I mean, how feasible is escape from this society? Do you think you're setting yourself up for failure? Do you think that, you know, you'll be able to, you know, maintain this redoubt, or how are you going to deal with the legal and possibly even physical attacks? Because obviously, if you take Orania as an example, it doesn't matter how right you do it, you know, they're going to want it eventually, right?
Yes, if we don't take control of the public conversation. But I think with the openness of social media nowadays, our voice does get out there. And it's not just white people who see the reason in what we're doing. There are a lot of blacks, Hispanics, Asians, Muslims who believe what we're doing is perfectly fine. In fact, they would like the right to do the same kind of thing for themselves. So we have to be aggressive in defending our rights up to the limit, that's the tack that we've gone with. You know, someone has to push up right to what is potentially going to get them in trouble. So we're on that borderline. The public conversation is getting louder about it. More people are aware of what's going on.
We'll be back with Eric Orwell. I'm sorry to cut you off. We got to go to commercial break and we'll be right back with more. Don't go anywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, James O'Keefe was here in studio last week. He was on the last hour, and I forgot to give him methylene blue until the last 30 minutes, but he was going on Owen. So I asked him on air, take it now, I'm not going to say what it does, and tell us honestly what your response is. And it was, quite frankly, pretty amazing.
So the crew just reminded me that James O'Keefe has not tried methylene blue, or they asked me to ask him. He has it, doesn't know what it is, but he's so nice and trusting, he just took it. It's actually cyanide, James. No, seriously.
Trying to poison me.
It's really good for you. It takes 30 minutes to hit. It's not a stimulant, but it creates mitochondrial function and skips the oxidative process two levels or three levels in the cells. Usually takes 30 minutes to hit. You're on Owen at 4. Just please, Owen, talk to Owen. Ask if it hit you, what you felt. And if you didn't, we're going to put it on air and you'll be the only guest that hasn't. So slam the rest of your medicine.
You got it.
You're asking what methylene blue is. It is something RFK Jr. pushes. It's something I've known about for years. But we've got the best, and it is amazing what it does to your body.
All right. I'm looking forward to that.
Sometimes it hits in 15 minutes. You got to let us know what you feel.
Wait, I've been drinking it for about 10 minutes, so we'll see.
You just started drinking about 2 minutes ago.
I finished the rest of it.
20 minutes late now.
I just took it. I took a lot of it, and I would say it was the effect on me was light sensations. It was increased light perception. That's what happened to me.
The pixels of the world around you, the simulation, like enhanced a little bit?
Enhancing my eyes when a light, and I woke away, just a bit of enhancement perception there.
But then after he talked about his eyesight getting clearer, I got reminded by the crew that I've had callers about this effect, and there's actually medical literature out there.
I've got glaucoma. My vision has been crap for the last 20 years.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's perfect now.
What?
Yeah.
How long have you been taking Methylene Blue?
5 days. After 3 days, perfect vision.
No kidding.
Depth perception's back. And, I don't have to hold my phone at my hip to read it.
Wow.
Like, it's crazy.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that, man.
This stuff is crazy amazing, and the medical research shows that.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
Yeah! I mean, it's so good, it's scary. It's just amazing. So yes, it really does work. It varies person to person, but it's amazing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. I must say that it does a damn good job.
99% of people that take it have between moderate to just insanely good effects. So good for your whole body.
Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now. I'm a practicing dentist, so I have more patients to treat coming up, so I'm always looking for that afternoon boost without the slump.
With this, it's like in your head where you're like, you can feel it. Your body's a little tingly, but you're just more aware of what's going on.
This stuff kicked in, and it like instantly, I just felt like this weird meditative energy. I don't know how to explain it. The stuff's new to me, but I like it. Methylene Blue works for me.
I would definitely recommend the Alex Jones Methylene Blue here. It's great stuff, so thank you, Alex. Keep it coming.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water? Methylene Blue. Mel Gibson also praised Methylene Blue on Joe Rogan recently.
This stuff works, man. But whatever you do, do your own research, talk to your physician, and then get the very best medical grade Methylene Blue supplement out there at thealexjonesstore.com. We have a limited time sale until next Tuesday, the 29th, where you get one bottle of Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com and get a second bottle free right now. The limited time offer at thealexjonesstore.com. Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My guest is Eric Orwall. You can find him on X at AARVOLL underscore. That's AARVOLL underscore. Or returntotheland.org. That's the website for his organization. He's creating a, what do you call it, an independent community, an intentional community? Can you explain that phrase? It's sort of self-explanatory, but why do you use that that phrase to describe what you're doing?
I was always interested in intentional communities. It's been a longstanding movement in the U.S. That's the branding of it in recent decades. But really, intentional community is how our country was founded. It was people setting out a charter, you know, doing something consciously, getting a group together and founding something like that. There are dozens of intentional communities around the country founded on various principles. One of our co-founders, Peter Seary, he founded an intentional community about 10 years ago in South America. And that was around diet. At the time, he was a vegan. He only ate fruit. So that was a fruitarian community that he founded. So people found intentional communities for different reasons, and we've chosen to found one on the basis of our shared ancestry.
And so, you know, we were talking the last segment. I'm sorry you got cut off. So I want to let you finish your thoughts, because I asked you about Aranya, because I've done a lot of segments on this show talking about Aranya and sort of showing, like, as successful as you can be, you can see that the South African government is eyeing it for expropriation. And you know, if they want to, they're gonna go in and just take it all. So, you know, to me, I see that and I go, okay, we can't just run away. You can't just run away and create a community, because they're gonna come for you. Even if you're not bothering anybody, even if you do it all yourself, at a certain point, you know, the people that want it are gonna come and try to take it. And so again, I'm not trying to, like, you know, poo-poo your programs. I think you seem to be incredibly successful so far. I mean, even lasting 2 years, that's an accomplishment. Not most organizations don't last 2 years. So I'm not trying to, like, you know, throw rain on your parade, but I'm sure you've thought about that, and how do you deal with that eventuality that, like, people don't want this and those people have power and, you know, they're going to try to stop you. How do you contend with that eventuality?
Yeah, I think the people who don't want this and are pushing against it are losing power on the whole. I think decentralized social media and open social media is allowing our voice to get out there, and public sentiment, I think, is actually firmly on our side. So if our case does go to court, you know, we're in Arkansas for a reason. Everyone is conservative here. All the judges are conservative. I think we would fare very well in court in Arkansas if it came to that. And even if we didn't, we would keep it going up the appeals process until, hey, you could see a Supreme Court case out of someone trying to sue us. And I think this is the cultural climate with the best odds of success. It's not guaranteed, you know, certainly, but it's the best shot that I can see for trying to preserve our ability to have our own independence as a people. So if it doesn't go well, not all is lost. Essentially, we'll have forced the establishment to go full mask off. When it came to the justification for civil rights law, Fair Housing Act, where businesses are not allowed to choose their customers and, you know, neighborhoods are not allowed to choose their community members, the justification was, well, you're depriving people of color of opportunities. So, you know, if a Black man is traveling across the country and hotels are allowed to discriminate, well, then he might not be able to find safe lodging, and that's just not right. And so we have to force hotels to accept, which, sure, in that case, there's a valid legal argument to that. But then when you keep creeping with that same logic to the extent where we can't even have our own private intentional community where we're not selling real estate, you know, we formed a corporation that owns our land here, and we own shares in that corporation. And, you know, we don't own our lots, fee simple. We've developed this whole legal structure to make it very clear, like, we are an intentional community celebrating our identity. We're not real estate developers selling lots and land. Now that's the angle of attack probably that they would use. But if they do attack us on that basis, considering how much effort we went through trying to do this legally, I think the public will see that it is simply illegal to have a white community. Mm-hmm. And they've gotten around just the explicit statement, like, no, you're not allowed to do your own thing, by saying it's about depriving others of opportunity. In this case, this was raw land. There was no housing here. We built everything from scratch. So if we're not even allowed to do that, and we're not selling real estate, and we're not renting to the public or anything like that, we're not doing business with the public, well, then they've gone full mask off. And then I think this kind of conservative backlash and anti-establishment backlash will be taken to new levels, levels the establishment, I don't think, wants to see.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, not only is the landscape shifting under our feet as we speak, it's happening, like, way more rapidly than I even expected. I think a couple months ago, I put out a tweet saying, you know, I think by 2028, there will be an explicitly pro-white candidate who will be winning elections in America. And there could be multiple, just because you see the way that people are no longer, you know, putting up with the obvious discrepancy where they're writing articles going, congratulations, 97% of the new executive hire were all non-white people. And it's like, white people are sitting here going, wait, why are we taking this again? Why is everybody else allowed to, you know, speak for themselves and have ethnic interest groups, and we're not? Like, that hypocrisy is sort of becoming, you know, people are becoming aware of it. And it, you know, I think 2028 may have been, I might not have been ambitious enough. It might be 2026 that we're seeing, you know, politicians running saying, I will help our white community, you know, maintain our values and traditions. And I want to play a video. It's just a minute and 30 seconds, but I see this as a total watershed, unprecedented happening in American government. This is Representative Eric Schmidt talking about how the civil rights movement and the Civil Rights Act has been used to discriminate against white people. Again, this is something that's been eminently observable for everybody paying attention. Like, it's just obvious that white people have been discriminated against for a long time. And now people are recognizing it. And I think, you know, like a snowball rolling down the hill, the bigger it goes, the bigger it gets, the faster it goes, the bigger it gets, the faster it goes. Like, it's just going to accelerate when as people sort of reject this false understanding that white people are not allowed to see themselves as a group worthy of having their own interests. So I want to go to this short 1 minute video from Eric Schmidt and your response on the other side. Here's a congressman talking about white interests for the first time in my life. Let's watch.
Let me begin with a hard but necessary truth. For at least the last decade, America's civil rights laws have been used not to prohibit discrimination, but to institutionalize it. The modern civil rights regime, both inside and outside of government, has been wielded like a weapon, not to safeguard the equal rights of all citizens, but to engineer a radical new social order built upon the deliberate dispossession of huge swaths of our country. Rather than protecting the constitutional order of the founders, it has become the vanguard of a revolution in the political, legal, social, and even moral underpinnings of American society. The revolution has gone by many names: affirmative action, anti-racism, social justice. Today, it most commonly is referred to as diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. But whatever the name is, in every instance, it amounts to the same thing: a new racial caste system sanctioned and enforced by the administrative state. Americans never voted for any of this. It slunk in through the back door, cloaked in bureaucratic doublespeak and soothing euphemisms. But today, it has wrapped itself around all the great institutions of American life: our schools, our businesses, our government, and even our armed forces.
So there's Representative Eric Schmidt talking about a new racial caste system that we're all familiar with and recognize, and most of us despise. Now, he says huge swaths of the country, so he's still not saying white people, even though it's obvious that's who he's talking about. So we're not quite there yet. But how do you see the, you know, general title shift of American politics happening, and how does your program Return to the Land play into that, or contravene that, or contribute to that in any way?
Yeah, I actually reposted that clip from Schmidt. I think it's very encouraging to see, and it's not an isolated incident. There was a court decision against affirmative action in college admissions a few months back, and I think people understand the injustice of these racial quotas. People don't yet understand how pervasive it is in the corporate world. You know, people are familiar with some basic numbers, like the fact that less than 10% of new hires at Fortune 500 companies are white men. So, you know, there's enough pieces of the puzzle that the public is beginning to take issue with this whole regime and apparatus. They just haven't been adequately informed about how deep it goes, you know, to the extent where people might wonder, you know, in advertising, why are they constantly overrepresenting certain groups and underrepresenting white men? And it's because legally it's safer for them to do that. If advertisers don't adequately reflect the makeup of the area that they're displaying their ad in, then they can be sued for millions or even billions of dollars. Corporations who don't hire enough non-whites can be sued for billions of dollars. There has never been an affirmative action or DEI type lawsuit directed against a company that didn't have enough whites. It only ever goes one way. And I think that uncovering of the depth and power of this civil rights regime, DEI regime, is the job of people like us who are speaking publicly about this injustice. So, I was in communities online that were getting red-pilled, so to speak, on some of these issues years ago. And there are different phases in that process. At first, you break the previous conditioning. You break down your old belief, the naive belief in the propaganda that you received. Then you start to think critically. You become curious. You replace your old beliefs with new, better informed positions. But it takes time for that to kind of sink in, and you're willing to now behave differently, act differently, speak up, and you have to reach a critical mass for that point to be reached. And I think we're pretty much getting there. And I think the, what's happening with Return to the Land is absolutely going to be a driver going forward. If they sue us, that is only going to open this conversation even wider.
Yeah, and so, and Giggs, that was sort of my next question is what is next for Return to the Land? And, you know, I really enjoyed your conversation with Nick Fuentes. And for anybody that, that follows Nick, you know, there's a funny sort of parallel with InfoWars, because Nick's sort of idea is we need elite human capital. We need to be taking over the institutions. And I tend to agree with that. You have more of a, so it's sort of the top down from the bottom up distinction. And you're sort of the bottom up. We need to just sort of get the basics down, the foundations, build communities. Nick's talking about going, and so it was really interesting to hear you guys talk about that. And I've always said that InfoWars has this two-prong approach where we want to change things at the legal level. We want people to be active and go out and run for office and protest and, you know, bring things, you know, bring attention to everybody so you can change things legally through the government or institutions or create your own organizations while simultaneously protecting yourself and your family by doing water filters, protecting yourself from the poison. So it's this two-pronged approach of you need to protect yourself and your family from the immediate danger that you face while also working to change things systematically through policy, through policy and action. So can you talk a little bit about like what the plans are for the future of Return to the Land? And do you see this as being part of a wider national push for, I would call it an anti-discrimination push to stop, you know, white people from being destroyed in our own countries? How do you see the future of Return to the Land?
Yeah, I have emphasized that bottom up side because it's basically what's within my power. Right. But the bottom up absolutely complements the top down. You know, if we are in the communities, we can elect local representatives. If we have grassroots organizations, we can engage in door knocking more effectively, even than mainstream candidates who have big money behind them, because we have belief and honesty. And we're willing to go out and, you know, get personally involved. And that's what building these bottom-up communities provides. It's a base that then can act as political leverage for large-scale change. Mm. So we're currently planning a few other full-time residential communities, especially in Appalachia and the Pacific Northwest. Those communities will likely be on the ground running in the next 6 months. Of course, we'll see how it actually goes. Beyond that, I'm planning a tour around the country to help organize not just full-time residence communities, but also recreational areas and community centers. I think white people who care about their identity need some aspect of their daily life that changes because they have decided, I'm going to stand behind this. Like, they've heard the news, they've learned about the injustice in the system, they want to do something about it, but right now there's nowhere they can show up. So I want to make sure there are places where people can show up and contribute. And it's not like we get together and burn crosses and use racial slurs. No, we get together, we build nice community centers, we host sporting events, we host recitals and talent shows. That's what we do at our events here. We've always had talent shows and you know, seminars on different cultural things. So I think that is a worthwhile project, even if it wasn't for the sake of, you know, top-down political change. And it's not that it's for the sake of that. For me, this, you know, the purpose of all of this is having communities where we can maintain our people, our tradition. Basically, every society throughout history, if you look at any myth, what is the goal of the hero? To, you know, protect the village, to preserve the existence of his people and their traditional ways. And sometimes to bring new technology or new ideas and lead to a modification, but it's never the good thing to do is to replace our village with totally different villagers. You know, that's never been the goal of any society. So
would not be an entertaining tour, heroic story. Yeah.
No, not at all. It's interesting. The new Moana kind of teased that was the the goal was like mass immigration to their island. I don't know if you saw the Moana film.
I avoided that, luckily. Well, you know, but it's interesting what you say, because, and it's funny to me, because as you're talking, what I'm thinking is like, I'm thinking about my Jewish friends that all spend a lot of time at the Jewish Community Center. There are Jewish community centers in every, you know, state, and all of my Jewish friends, they all either take classes there or teach classes there or just spend time there. And it's a very useful thing. And it's one of those things that I see how their community has a place to go and, you know, to be around. And I think that'd be nice. That'd be nice to have. And of course we have church, we go to church and stuff, but, it's a little bit different. I do wonder, I mean, it seems like what you're doing, a lot of people do it all around the country, but it usually has to do with like a religious, you know, there are religious communities, there are, you know, communities that organize around a concept or an idea. Obviously it's the fact that there's a racial aspect to yours that, you know, makes the mainstream media treat it as objectionable. But how do you join your community? I mean, how does it work? Do you determine whether somebody's allowed to come or not? And do you look at who they are and what they believe? Do you look at just their race? I mean, how do you determine who is allowed to be in your community and how would somebody apply? Like, just how does that work? The crew wants to know if Myron Gaines would be allowed. Would Myron Gaines be allowed in your community? How strict are the rules here?
I'm not a big follower of Myron, so I don't know what his views are in particular, or his race for that matter. We are an association for people of European heritage, both, you know, genetically and culturally. So it's not simply on the basis of your race. You also have to positively affirm that European Western cultural tradition, which involves, you know, Greek philosophy, Roman engineering, Christian values, the whole kind of swath, classical music. Not that you only have to listen to Bach or anything, but, you know, you want to embody those Western, particularly Western virtues. And there are some things that are universal, you know, across the board, but we're looking for people who value the Western path. Just like there are Eastern paths that you can take and traditions you can follow, there is a Western civilizational path and tradition that we want to emphasize. So a big factor is, of course, are you genetically, ethnically European? Do you adhere to traditional European values like monogamy? You know, we wouldn't accept a polygamist. We wouldn't accept someone who promoted LGBT values. That's never been traditional. People try to ascribe that to ancient Greece and Rome. When you actually get deep into the evidence, they had practices that, you know, we in our relatively degenerate mindset interpret to be homosexual relationships, but pederasty was really more of like a teaching relationship than anything. Sometimes there was some homoeroticism, let's be honest, but it, you know, it was never drag queen story hour or marching in the street, virtually nude and just explicitly promoting things that are not natural for the human body. So monogamy, heterosexual normative family structures, the nuclear family, we appreciate, especially people who value that pioneering spirit that is unique to our experience as Americans. And also because we are developing raw land, it would be helpful if you were into homesteading, that sort of thing. But people join the association all the time who have no intention of immediately moving down and building a cabin or anything. We have big events every year for members where we appreciate European culture. We network, we build together, we have work parties and stuff like that. So it's a case by case basis that we decide on. The board of managers, we interview people, we look at the application they fill out and reach a decision. We also have very strict procedures that we follow if anyone has to be kicked out. So that's, you know, people are given notice, the board votes, members vote. So we've tried to do things in a fair way, but yeah, absolutely. It is a European ancestry association and a European cultural tradition association.
You know, as you're talking, it reminded me of this post that's gone viral recently from @OldBooksGuy on X. He says, you know, step one, humans suffer from recurring problem. Then Eureka, a solution is found. That solution becomes a tradition. Future generations don't have that problem anymore. Since they can't see the problem, they think the tradition is just something useless, so the tradition gets thrown away for efficiency or progress, and then the problem comes back. And I feel like that is what's happening so much in America, where you know they treat the idea that like a mother and a father being together and raising a child is just some superstition that we've been passed down to. And it's like, no, that we've determined through generation upon generation of trial and error, this is actually the best way to do things. This is actually the best outcomes for happiness, for prosperity, for safety, for health. This is what you're supposed to do. And yet people just see this as like some arbitrary superstition that's been imposed upon us. But no, these traditions are traditions for a reason. And we want to uphold those and maintain those, not because of bigotry, but because we want to raise successful and happy families. So I think that's a beautiful thing to point out too. So of course you can follow Eric Orvoll on X at AARVOLL underscore. The website is returntotheland.org. I'll be watching, you know, your progress with a lot of interest. And, you know, I hope you're able to weather the storm that's probably coming, because, you know, if you are able to succeed with what you're doing, that is a major threat to the powers that be, who rely on us being separate from each other and dislocated and individualistic and atomized and incapable of acting as a community. Final thoughts, Eric, on what's ahead and what you want people to know about your program.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me on. A big fan of InfoWars. It's sort of surreal to be a guest on InfoWars after watching it for years and years. But yeah, I mean, we're an association for our tradition. If you appreciate that tradition, you don't necessarily have to move down here, but you can network with us. You can get involved in future projects, recreational lands, community centers, things like that. We want it to be a big tent. You know, we accept Christians, European pagans, people who are agnostic. Most of us are Christians, and we tend to, you know, align around Christian values more than other things, just like, you know, Western civilization has been. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, give us a try. If anyone has a problem with our values, you know, we're here to talk. And I think we need more discourse between these opposing sides. I don't have a lot of optimism there, but I'm perfectly willing to talk.
Hey, the conversation has started. Thank you so much for being with us. That's going to do it for us, folks. Stay tuned. Alex Jones, 90 seconds.
So we had Stuart Rhodes, the founder of Oath Keepers, former K-6 political prisoner, constitutional lawyer, so much more on Paratrooper. And he wanted to try Methylene Blue like so many other guests have done live on air. I got so busy with all the Iran war stuff and the commies rioting to ever get him to take it on air. All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feel really great, to fog lifting, to just over the top crying and feel so good. Especially the first time you take it. Electrochemical in the mitochondria, cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr.'s loves it. We've got the strongest ultimately blue. But he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended, I forgot to do this. He's like, hey, are we doing methylene blue? So he's gonna take it now, but guys, don't forget when he's on Owen. So maybe he forgets before he's gonna go off to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. I've had like out of 300 plus people we've given it to, two people did not feel it. That means your mitochondria is in perfect shape. So Stuart, go ahead and take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people, it hits within about 30 minutes, starts peaking after a couple hours. But you're going to be on Owen. So please, before you go, just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now that you have your energy spike?
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely, I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project, and I was pretty efficient in sleep. Yeah, right. I'm feeling pretty good.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
That's good. Well, that's probably, I don't know, that might be because you're hanging out with me. So we gotta maybe try to get.
I think it's methylene blue.